Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This is a Virgin Media Originals podcast series.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Hooked On with me, Fionnuala J, with thanks to Virgin Media Ireland. In this series of Hooked On, we are looking at some of the films of note playing at this year's Virgin Media Dublin International Film Festival, one of which is the Irish comedy drama Be Good or Be Gone. This independent feature is directed by Cathal Nally and stars Les Martin and Declan Mills, both of whom produced the film. And Les is also on writing duties, so it's safe to say everyone was spinning a few plates on Be Good or Be Gone, a testament to the hard work in getting it made and released. The story centres on two cousins and petty criminals, Stee and Weed, who received temporary release from prison. Stee wants to make a better life for himself, his long-term partner Dee, and their six-year-old daughter, Ellie Mae. Weed's ambition is to conquer the world of high fashion, thus becoming the new Galliano, but a chronic substance abuse problem needs conquering first. Our Gordon Hayden recently spoke to the stars and producers of Be Good or Be Gone, Les Martin and Declan Mills.
The good man seek pleasure, which is good. The evil man seek pleasure, what is bad.
Your request for temporary release has been granted. Oh, lads, be good.
What are you doing here, Stee?
All I'm after is a chance to put things right. That's all.
You're too late, Stee.
Make a walk.
You think I can?
Of course you can.
I wish I was as sure about anything as you are about everything.
All about attitude, isn't it?
Congratulations on Be Good or Be Gone. I was just saying to Declan before we started recording, I suppose one of the big talking points of the film is how you guys did everything in your power to make Be Good or Be Gone happen, which is a real testament to everyone's perseverance to get a film made, because it's by no means an easy task. But we'll get to that side of the story in just a minute. But Les, I want to start with you first for people who may be intrigued by your film Be Good or Be Gone, because the trailer is out and people can see the poster online, and it is of course playing today at the Virgin Media Dublin International Film Festival, and then it's going to be released on a number of streaming services from April 13th. But tell us about the plot to the film.
I suppose the plot is about two Dublin criminal cousins who they have 4 days temporary release from prison to try and make their lives a bit better. Try and, I suppose, transcend their normal circumstances and as such, and make, you know, because they have 4 days to do it as well, so it's kind of a limited amount of time. So basically my character Stee, he wants to try and rekindle his relationship with his girlfriend, and also he has a six-year-old daughter. So it's been a while since he's had a visit from his partner, and he senses that there's something up, you know, when he gets out. So it's basically he just wants to kind of stay in this straight and narrow, for the sake of his family. And then Weed, his cousin, he wants to, let's say, he has aspirations to make it big in the world of fashion, but unfortunately he has a heroin addiction as well on top of that, so it makes things a little bit tricky. There's a lot of obstacles and problems that the lads encounter the minute they get out of prison. So yeah, that's, and there's a lot of humor in it as well, as you know, we kind of describe it as a kind of dramatic comedy.
Declan, to bring you in here on Weed, because he's one of those fellas where he can be the life and soul of the party, but at the same time, he can be a bit of an anchor to Stee. So tell me a little bit about him and what he was like to play.
Well, he's great fun to play because there is a good bit of humor in the film, and thankfully a percentage of the humor is relatively physical, yeah, because we wanted it to maybe kind of not just be so Dublin centric or Irish centric, so people abroad would get, you know, so even if Americans are watching it with the subtitles, because there's a lot of Dublinese in it, well then they'll get, you know, something out of it, because of, you know, where the comedy wise that it's quite physical as well. So that suits me very down to the ground, because I love that, like those kind of roles where you can throw your body into it, you know. And where the dialogue was concerned, what Les and what Paul wrote was very accessible. I didn't feel I had to make any effort to you know, it's always difficult to learn bad dialogue, but when it's coming into your system very quickly, well then it means that the chances that's going to be accessible to everybody else as well. So it was great fun to learn. It was great fun to improvise and to play around with it, because we had that type of leeway with Cahill as well. So it was great crack to do. We shot it in about 2 weeks, I think, generally, most of it anyway. And because you're like independent film, that you have, different set of pressures, but also you're quite liberated in a way, because, you know, nobody looking over your shoulder, no producers coming on, because, you know, I'm doing the same with the producer, so it doesn't matter, you know. So it was really great fun to do. And also, you know, what's interesting about Weed, I think, is that he does some terrible things and some terrible things happen to him. But I think also the audience is given the opportunity to get inside him a little bit and maybe feel for him, maybe not totally sympathize with him, but certainly maybe understand, you know, the more kind of softer dimensions of him and of Les as well, and his relationship with his girlfriend and that, and what he's trying to do. And of course, the humor just buffers all the difficulties, you know, and the challenges and how they deal with their obstacles, let's say. But it was great fun to do. And it was really, really good. I can't wait for the second one.
Les, Declan mentioned there that you co-wrote the film as well. How long ago did you put pen to paper, or did you crack out the laptop and start writing?
Oh God, it was actually based on a short story going back to 1993, would you believe? It wasn't very good. It was meant to be a short film, and it was kind of like a catalyst, a showcase for myself as an actor to try and write something. So it was the two characters, but they were called something else. I think they were called something ridiculous like Dippy and Quacker or something like that. Declan didn't know that. So I parked it. I just stuck it on a shelf. And it wasn't until 2009 when I met Paul Morphy on a course. I think it was a basic computer course. And we struck up a relationship. And Paul was I read some of Paul's merely writing. It was a novel he was working on. And I thought he had a great way with dialogue. Kind of very quirky Dublinese kind of spin on dialogue. And I asked him, I had a loose first draft of the script already written up, and I said to Paul, would you be interested in collaborate on a script? And thankfully he said yeah. We were both, he liked the idea of the premise, so it was just a process then of meeting up over the next couple of years. I'd do a draft, Paul would do a draft. And then we'd work out, we'd meet up and we'd exchange ideas about characters and plot and all that type of thing. And yeah, and then we just continued for the next couple of years trying to get producers on board. And we did have a couple of producers at one stage, but nothing really progressed in terms of moving the production on. So then, I felt I needed to revisit the script and see, was there anything that was in the script that was stopping us from really getting it made, produced? So I decided to send it over to a script editor in England to have a look at it. And that was priceless. You know, his feedback in terms of, he just broke everything down in forensic detail, gone through character, plot, structure. And, you know, it was almost like after, like in my head, I thought it was a shooting script, you know, because we'd worked on it for so long. I thought it was brilliant. You know, it's the best thing I've ever written. So when I got his notes back, it was like I needed to have a lie down. I swear to God, I felt like packing in, just giving up. And I had to let it just sink in, all his notes, and kind of try and figure out what he meant. So it took a while, and then I just went at it again for the next couple of years until it landed on Cattle's lap. And that's really, that's the genesis of how it really came about.
Because you've also been very active, Declan, with a GoFundMe page as well to try and get the necessary cash in over the line for the post-production side of Be Good or Be Gone. And people who look at the film's credits will see both yourself and Les are the producers of the film. So how early into the production, Declan, did you come on board, not only as an actor but as a producer? Had you already been friends with the lads, or had they reached out to you initially just on the acting side of it?
Well, basically, I knew Les. I think I knew Les anyway, like from just being around, because I knew people that he would know, like in the theatre scene and that. And he showed me the script. It had a different title. I'm not sure if the characters had the same name. It had the title of Even the Losers, and he showed it to me, and he was telling me about his history of trying to get it produced. And we just thought, like, well, let's make a list of directors. We got a, you know, directors I'd know one, he'd know one or something. And we got in touch with each of them, and Cahill's name came on the list. I knew Cahill from a call center that I worked in like years ago. And I wasn't sure where he felt about doing a feature. And so it's just a matter really after that to see how people respond to the script. They're kind of, you know, their instinctive response to it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And his instinctive response was to just let's just do it. You know, let's do it. You know, we'll deal with the obstacles or wherever it gets in the way as we go. So that was really it. I think, you know, bless him, Carl cast the film outside of myself and Les, because Les just, you know, threw that Weeds character to me, and thankfully Carl didn't want to change that. So that was really important to us, because we'd had done a little bit of work together. We ran around Dublin in costume getting our photographs taken, working out to see if the chemistry would be good between us, because the spine of the film is really the chemistry between the two lads, you know. If that doesn't work, everything else falls apart. So thankfully, Carl saw that, and so there's a spark there that he could work with, and he really brought it forward then, really, you know, really brought it forward. So as a producer, I never wanted, no interest in being a producer in any shape or form. But just then the lads would come back and say, oh, do you know if we can get this? Or, you know, do you know, we'd all be pooling ideas for editors or for locations or whatever. And it just suddenly, you know, you're called a producer. That's it. Then you're getting into the creative element of it, and the production element of it is relatively what you'd be familiar with. But then you're getting into the kind of, film is two things. You've got to make it, you know, which is difficult enough, but then you've got to try and sell it, you know, and that's a business. It's not an art focused, it's business focused. When we're jumping around in costumes and being funny, well then, let's say that's art. But if you're talking about getting it out into the market, that's business. And none of us had really any clue. I mean, myself and Les had theatre companies before and brought stuff to the market then, but the film is just so, there's so many departments. When you see the number of people in any film, you go, what's going on? Like, what do all these people do? You know, but you realize when every department has to kick in, how professional they have to be, and you know how subsequently they are kind of outsourcing other things that you might not know about. So this list has grown. And with the funded, actually, on that, I counted, we have over 150 people involved if you count all the funded pledgers. You know, it's a lot of people. So suddenly you're, not say responsible, if you were to think, oh, you're responsible for this number of people or for this level of commitment that's coming in, or financial commitment, which is basically the deposit of a house. You'd go mad. But once, because you're producing it, you're just thinking of the next thing. What's a music agreement, Gordon? I've never seen one. Then you're asked, oh, can you go write one? Look, you know, wear me crayons. Like, I haven't got a clue. So we learned as we went along. And like outside of the process of creating what's on the screen, you know, performance wise, it was a great journey of experiencing the coalface of what it's like to try and get into the business of it, business end of it.
The way you just explained that, Declan, I feel like I'm back there with you. I've got that feeling of the stress building up and the pressure, especially when things are suddenly being heaped upon both of you trying to juggle all of these new facets of filmmaking, which has never been your area of expertise before.
Not at all. And the funniest thing is, people ask us, we've been asked a few times before, you know, what would you do differently? And I think what we do is that one things that I think of is to enjoy every little victory that we got over, you know, that we got through, you know, getting distribution or getting a decent post house or getting the, you know, posting over, you know, drives over to America during the pandemic and it's just not arriving. All these sound like, you know, small little things. But like, as I always say, when you're in the trenches, you don't really think of how the war is going. But I think next time will be just to kind of enjoy the fact that you accomplished that particular, challenge and then go to the next one, as opposed to be hungry and, okay, what's the next one? You know, just throwing yourself at the next thing.
Yes.
But yeah, it's good crack, I have to say. It's all about chemistry, though, as well, as much on the screen as it is off the screen. Because if you can't work with the post guys, if you can't work with your producer's rep or your sales distribution PR person, whatever, you know, that affects, I think, what the public see and how many of the public see it. So for us, like somebody said to me at some point, how do you create a business? You create a business by relationship by relationship. And I think that's what it's been, you know, for us, is just establishing and been really thankful for the people I have a bit of faith in the project, you know, from funded people up to, you know, people putting their own money in, like larger sums. So, I mean, I think I'd be more thankful, more grateful the next time.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Les, just to bring you in here, because this idea started with yourself and you had to overhaul a whole load of notes in order to crack the script for Be Good or Be Gone. And from the conversation we've had so far, it took in and around 2 weeks to shoot the film. So how has that all been for you? Like, have you had to kill your darlings because there may have been days where we're just not going to get another take on this particular scene? So have you been able to divorce yourself from that side of it? Because I'd imagine there were days where what was on the page just unfortunately never made it to being filmed.
Yeah, it was extremely tough now. And the first block of filming that we did, I suppose in terms of writing the script, you have to be kind of realistic and you know, you kind of know you're going to have a small budget to work with. So you can't have that kind of helicopter chase down the Liffey that you may want. So you have to scale back, or, you know, explosions and all that sort of thing. Not that the script had that. But, so we were always kind of mindful that we'd have to, you know, keep it realistic and, you know, in terms of what we could shoot. But there was times in the first block where, you know, you're not going to get 10 takes on every scene that you do. But even in some of the stuff that we did shoot, we'd notice like later on, or it would be brought to our attention that there might be a lighting problem. So we'd have to go back and reshoot, which kind of a little bit into our shooting time. But the script itself was very ambitious. You know, I think there was something like 40 characters or something, and a lot of locations and a lot of outdoor stuff that we shot. And I think, what was it, Derek? Nearly, I felt like 60% of the movie was outdoors. So, you know, we were battling with the elements, you know, kind of streets that, you know, weren't contained with people. And, you know, it was more difficult for a small independent feature like ours. I mean, I suppose, you know, one of the inspirations would have been, you know, in terms of making a movie with a small budget, from my point of view, would have been, you know, you'd look at some Irish movies or like, what was that one? Jared Barrett's, the one he made, what was it? Pilgrim Hill.
Oh, yes.
You know, I think I read an article, he made it for something like $5,000. And then there was Ben Wheatley, you know, the English director who made Down Terrace.
Ah, yeah, Down Terrace. He shot that in his editor's house, Robin Hill. I think it was over 8 days.
Yeah, and I think he took out a bank loan for about $5,000. But he had, like, you know, a small cast and crew, and it was set in the one house. We had a similar budget, but we had about, I don't know, 40 actors, right? Tons of locations. So we were just crazy, like, to think... When we think back now, and could you make the movie now, as we did a few years ago, on the same budget? Saying, like, you wouldn't get out of bed, you know. It would just kind of traumatize you if you thought about it. And we just kind of naively went at it, you know. We just kind of said, right, let's do it for this amount of money, and we'll just keep going. Every obstacle, every challenge that we encountered, we just seemed to meet it head on.
Do you think maybe the fact that the experience, from a producer's point of view, that because you went in with such a lack of experience in that area, that it allowed you to push forward more so than maybe if you had a lot of experience in a producer's seat, that you would have thought, well, I just think that that's a bit of a dead end there. But because you went in with this lack of experience, you don't know what the end game is going to be, that you're going to just persevere and maybe push for, like, getting music clearance on certain songs that could have kind of gone nowhere, but you pushed and pushed and pushed until you got it. And that was all through the fact that, actually, on this account, maybe the lack of experience may have helped.
Absolutely. I think if we had a producer, like a top producer on board, he'd probably say, look, you can't do it for this. You can't do it, you know. We'd have too many restrictions placed upon ourselves by some other, maybe, producer. But the fact that we were kind of, we kind of fell into the producer role by accident, I think there was a certain naivety there that helped us, yes, in some ways, you know.
It's also down to the script, isn't it? Because if your initial response to the script is something that's, you know, not non-conceptual, that's just something you kind of, for want of a better word, feel, well, then when the challenges come, and whatever they be, or whatever level of production, you don't want to betray that feeling that you had, that you're compelled to make the film, you know, that, you know, when it gets difficult and you're pulling your hair out or for whatever. And I'm sure that's the same, that, you know, if it's a $50 million budget or whatever, there's still going to be challenges. They still have to keep the accounting within the books and all that kind of thing. So I think if the script is there, and your response to it is something that's, like, deep inside yourself, in your gut. But I think at the end of the day, you're not going to be able to sleep just because you can't, get some challenge sorted, or, you know, or a location comes down, or some forms are taking ages to come back, or insurance or things like that. You know, you're not, I wouldn't be able to sleep, you know, knowing that, is that the thing that's going to stop us making this? No.
Suppose the problems we would have encountered, you know, we didn't know they were coming. So we'd meet them every day, you know. Somebody described, it's like putting out fires on it, you know, each day. You put out a fire, another one starts, you keep on going until you get to the end.
Is that tough, though, bearing in mind that you are taking on multiple different roles within the process of making Be Good or Be Gone, because your head is trying to be in a scene and then you're worried about what is going on behind the scenes. And let's be honest, you're also working with an untested director to a certain degree. I know, Declan, you mentioned that you knew Cathal from your time working in a call centre, but can I ask you both about the worry that you had behind the scenes and how everything was ticking along, and then working with this untested director to a certain degree?
Well, I as an actor, this would have been the biggest part I've ever played. You know, I would have done short films and one-line parts here and there over the years, but it was also the challenge of playing a lead part in a film, which I'd never done. And then also being an on-the-ground producer, I found, like, tough, really tough, because you'd be doing a scene and then you'd have one of the crew coming over saying, look, we didn't get, the insurance company's just been on, a certain email didn't reach them, you know, and then there'd be constant worries. But I guess, you know, you deal with the problem, step back in, do the scene, and then you deal with the other problems later on. So it was kind of that process. But yeah, it was slightly exhilarating though at the same time, because the excitement, the adrenaline of just, you know, each day one thing was feeding the other, you know. But you knew, I think, with the crew and the cast that we had, and everyone was pulling in the right direction, and everyone believed in the script, that no matter what sets of problems or obstacles we encountered, there was always a solution at the end of the day, and we always got over it. Because I think, as well,
you're sorry, couldn't cross you, Les. There's one thing that you mentioned about pressure, and that when all those things are kind of happen in, you know, outside of action and cut, when it comes to action, that actually forces you to a large degree to be, you use that energy, and that forces you to be so focused. You know, it actually, I remember feeling there was a quite an emotional scene we had to do at some point on a Wednesday morning. I think it said Wednesday morning, but the Wednesday afternoon we lost location. So Cathal goes, oh, we'll do that one, we're going to do tomorrow. And I go, no, because I would have spent a night thinking about it, you know, I'll have to cry, all that kind of stuff. No, we're going to do it now. So I had no time to think. So it probably turned out better than if I had been intellectualizing it. Yeah. Conceptualizing it, trying to maybe more contrived, maybe, you know, as opposed to just, no, you got to throw him against the wall and he's got to start crying, okay, and you got to do it now. And the immediacy of that, I think the energy of it, maybe because of the nervousness of it, all that type of stuff, I think it fed into the scene. So it was a blessing instead of a something that was, you know, a hurdle in ways. You know, I mean, I did another feature years previous to that where the director was playing the actor. We're doing Merchant of Venice, I played Antonio, and the director was playing Shylock, you know. And I was thinking, Jesus, what's this going to be like, you know, because it's verse, blah, blah, blah. How do you keep it visually interesting? And when he was in front of the camera, he just came into this kind of zen type of mode, because the character called for that to be a little bit slower than everybody else, a little bit more ponderous. And the character helped him, you know, but also the other stuff, I think it just made him focus and there was a certain calm. And I think that was true for a lot of Cathal as well, for a lot of Cathal's work in the film as well, that all the madness going on and then suddenly we've got to do this. So everybody's got to be focused. You got one chance, you know, there's something theatrical about it in a way. You got one chance to go out and do it. You know, is the gun going to fire or not? So there's a certain amount of focus going when you know that you've got half a day, you know, that you could possibly, you know, be a little bit more, have a different energetic approach to it. But Cathal just would go into, you know, be quite calm and off we go. So those things, you know, hindsight can, you know, or beforehand can feel like obstacles or hurdles, but they can be very helpful, you know, to focus you.
People are now going to get to see Be Good or Be Gone at the Virgin Media Dublin International Film Festival. Les Declan, it's testament to your hard work that you got it onto the festival programme. Congratulations. And then people will be able to rent and buy it come mid-April. So it's finally out there. You've got the distributor, Random Media. They're behind it now. How is all of this sitting with you that the film is out there and the fact that it is premiering at the Virgin Media Dublin International Film Festival?
Completely surreal. You know, when we were starting out years ago, that I suppose for me the highlight would have been getting it into DIFF, you know, because it's just, I think when you're starting out making it, like, and it's just, you know, fairly small budget, and you know, you have modest expectations, you know, it was like a dream come true now getting into DIFF. And it's almost like it's come full circle, because we've spent a bit of time doing the festival circuits in places like America, Canada. So it's almost like it's coming home in some ways to Dublin, and this is the end of our festival journey. And look, I can only thank Grainne Humphreys. I can't thank her enough for really believing in the film, you know, getting behind it. So it's fantastic, and it's going to push it out to a wider audience, the fact that we're online, it's going online. So I mean, it would have been great to walk the red carpet and do all that type of thing. But at the same time, you know, you can't, it's great to just know that it's going to up and down the country, people get to see it.
Well, gentlemen, we wish you well with Be Good or Be Gone. It's a fantastic success story. Les Martin, Declan Mills, thank you so much for your time. And I really look forward to seeing what you're going to do next. Just before I let you go, will we see this team working together again? Do you think there will be another opportunity?
I hope so, yeah. I think Cattle and Deck got a few things in the pipeline, so I think we're going to keep it's a nice working relationship, we get on well together, so I'd like to think so.
Great stuff, very good, you old tease, Les. Thank you so much, Les Martin, Declan Mills. A real pleasure to talk to you both about Be Good or Be Gone.
Thanks.
You're not still knocking around with that correct name.
He's my cousin, man, you know.
You have to have a focus, man.
Yours would be
street clothes.
Fashion, exactly, yeah.
You reckon even with the stripe they go in my chains now, yeah?
Absolutely.
Where's a weed fella? Don't tell me. Out mooching for one final score, I suppose, yeah?
You'd raise on without that lad.
I want to know where he is and what he's doing.
Stay out of my way.
We're done.
No, you make those decisions, not you.
Find somewhere a sham to do your dirt.
Well, if you want to see that daughter of yours grow up, he'll be there.
I'll make things right. For the three of us, I will. I swear, I promise, if I make things right.
A bit uncoolie-woolie, that, isn't it?
What?
Getting battered by a bird.
You see the look in her eye? And she hit me with a bleeding shoe.
Yeah, did you get the make?
A labootin'. Dalmatian, I think. Could have been a zebra, but definitely Labuton.
Les Martin and Declan Mills there, the stars and producers of the Irish independent comedy drama Be Good or Be Gone, which screens at Virgin Media Dublin International Film Festival on March 4th and will be available to rent and buy from April 13th. For more details, log on to diff.ie. That's diff.ie. On our next podcast, we'll be talking to Emile Hirsch, Halloween star Andy Matichak, and Irish writer and director Ivan Kavanagh about their new horror film, Son. You don't want to miss that. This podcast was sponsored by Virgin Media Ireland and is produced by Gordon Hayden. For me, Fionnuala J, I'm looking forward to chatting to you again on the next Hooked On.
This is a Virgin Media Originals podcast series.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.